people think of being a creator as just, oh, I'm going to be an influencer and I'm going to get a lot of people to pay attention to what I have to say. And there's so much more to it than that. The real successes in this space, the people who are served well by being creators, don't think of it as creating content as being the end game. It's really just a means to an end. You know, it's about leadership. It's about taking your place as a leader. People who can turn their experience and their perspective into opportunities and assets that become maybe a business in and of themselves, but more often than not, assets that you can leverage to other areas of business outside the content economy.
At militarycreatorcon.com.
Great XQ. Roger.
Hey, Gordon. Good to see you.
Hey, Mara. Nice to be with you.
It's awesome to see you. So how have you been today?
Today has been a good day. It's been really nice weather here in LA, and the workload wasn't too stressful today. So overall, a positive day.
There's so many things I miss about LA. Yeah, growing
there's
up
a lot
in LA
not
was
to miss
great.
Too.
Yeah, I didn't want to go there, but yes, that is true as well. Yes, but I grew up there. I mean, I was there till I was, I think, till the year 2000, and then I moved away.
What part of LA?
I was born and raised in Beverly Hills, and then I sort of lived, you know, West LA, and you know, at different places in different areas, but mostly in the LA Basin, not the Valley.
Gotcha.
Yeah. You know.
Well, I grew up on the South Bay in Palos Verdes, and currently we now live in the Second Valley North, so the Santa Clarita Valley.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. That was a very big area for migration, I'll say, because it was beautiful and it was really a nice place to be. And so
it was
a lot
still
of my
affordable
friends,
up until about 12 years ago.
Exactly. A lot of my friends sort of moved out that way when they bought their own homes and stuff. Yeah. I have some friends in the Woodland Hills area. I have some friends in Agoura, I think is Agoura not Azusa, Agoura. Yeah. And, you know, so a couple different places. And then, you know, I have some friends that are still like Tarzana, Encino. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, if somebody was in New York, we'd be talking about Philadelphia and Camden, New Jersey, you know, all these other cities.
Exactly.
It's all LA.
Exactly. It's all LA. So I really, really, really love what you do. And I would love for you to share with everybody who's here with us right now a little bit about what you do.
Well, I have been practicing entertainment law for 34 and a half years now. Since the early 90s, and that has been a very diverse entertainment law practice focused on theater and film and television, and as new media came into play, I, being a geek and a tinkerer, set up my own website and blogs, and then I discovered podcasting, and so I became a podcaster coming up on 19 years ago now. And
wow, really early adopter. You're an OG.
And yeah, and because I was an early adopter, when I went looking for, you know, doing my due diligence as a lawyer, make sure I'm doing it by the book, I found out that there was no book.
There was no book back then.
There were no resources. And so I ended up doing a lot of research and I wrote the book.
I love that.
Yeah. So that kind of thing is how you get yourself branded as an expert, and I've become known as the podcast lawyer. And it's not just podcasting, but also all forms of digital media. I'm doing a lot of YouTube myself nowadays, as well as podcasting. And I just love the technology. I love the people that are doing this kind of stuff. It's a whole different vibe than the traditional Hollywood entertainment community. And that's part of the reason I just enjoy the work that I do, which is helping creators and their businesses take themselves from I've got a message and I want to share it to turning it into a whole business and really making a go of it, protecting themselves and the strategies to really grow into what I call becoming a modern media mogul.
And I wanted to talk a little bit about that, because that's something you're going to talk about at Military Creator Con. And I want to give people a taste, just a taste, of what you're going to be talking about in terms of that at Military Creator Con. So they kind of get a feel for what that session is going to be like.
Well, you know, when I talk about a modern media mogul, I'm really talking about someone who thinks more strategically than just being a creator, just making stuff and throwing it out there. You know, they're not just creating the content, but they're really turning things into assets that they can leverage and build a business around and on their expertise and their ideas and of course their experience. And really their podcasting and their videos and those kinds of things become the foundation for larger scale businesses. You know, the yes. prototype for what I think of as a media mogul is Walt Disney.
Great.
When you think
mogul.
About it.
Yeah.
This is a
yeah.
guy who created some content. He started making short films that led to bigger films, building a big audience. And then he was able to open theme parks and merchandising brands and to now have basically become one of the biggest conglomerates in the world. And,
right.
you know, it's all because he was making media. The media wasn't really the business. It was the springboard. It was the crank that starts the flywheel running, you know?
Right.
And so that's what I'm going to be talking about is sort of how to think about it, a mindset, really. When I give my talk, I will be talking about that. This creative economy really isn't about the creative as much as the economy, I guess you could say.
It's interesting you say this because in my business strategy hat,
yeah.
One of my big things I believe is that using content creation, specifically podcasting, is a great way for people who have entrepreneurial businesses, whether they're a mm-hmm. solopreneur or what have you, but particularly if they're a consultant, one mm-hmm. of the things I feel like they can do is interview those people that they want to work with for whatever reason, you know, kind of delving into their business, delving into the, you know, their journey, what they've learned. And then in that, they learn so much about that organization and what are the problems that they can solve as a consultant that I think it becomes a natural thing. That whole know, like, and trust is built during yeah. that time frame. And they're basically, it's like an interview for what you can do with them. And then it's a real easy transition, in my opinion, from there. And even if it isn't, it's a relationship that you've built that they can then refer you to someone else. And it's great content for someone who is an upcoming consultant to learn from, you know, how you would do things and how you would do things differently. Mm-hmm. It's just my thought, but.
Yeah, and you know, one interesting aspect of the podcasting economy and the way things have worked in podcasting, it's maybe a little, I think people have caught on to this a little bit, but early on, there was this idea that one of the best ways to sort of get a job interview or a business interview with a prospective client was to interview the CEO of that company on the, not a pretext, but, you know, without really it being a sales pitch. But right. now you're on their radar and they
right.
start to know and like and trust you. And then something opens up and they have a need for, you know, if they get to know who you are a little bit, it turns into a business opportunity. You're planting seeds. And
right.
if you tend the farm.
Exactly what I'm talking about. And I still think there's some value in that. I mean, that can't be, you know, that's to me like barely the tip of the iceberg. But it's yeah. kind of a nice way to say, look, I do this. In fact, I was talking to a girl the other day mm-hmm. who does a very interesting thing. Gosh, now I wish James was here. Because she does, I think they're called SCIFs. Uh-huh. Do you know what a SCIF is? So in the government world, top secret people go into secure yeah. SCIFs. Right, right. Yeah. So she designs them, makes them, does all this for the government entities, for government entities or what have you.
Sure.
So everything's very top secret-y. And I'm like, well, why don't you do a podcast? She goes, what the heck would they talk about? I go, I'm sure there's tons of things that people could talk about. You could become the top secret girl. Where, yeah. you know, because people are fascinated with people who do top secret stuff. Like, yeah, even though you can't talk about the specifics, it's kind of an interesting concept. Talk about it. And then, you know, the more people who share you and talk about you, that's, I mean, it's just an extra way for people to kind of know what you do.
And if you think of your podcast or your video series or whatever it is as also a marketing strategy and tool, this idea of something like a secure, you know, government secrets protection system really does translate into the business world too, because there is lots of business espionage going on, corporate espionage, and there are lots of businesses that have lots of trade secrets that they want to learn and figure out how to protect. And maybe sometimes actually having a SCIF at the office is a way to top level, you know, C-suite can have the conversations that even in a boardroom, just with a secretary sitting outside, it's a little off.
Right. You know. I totally agree. I think that it opens up that possibility mm-hmm. to other organizations and corporations that really wouldn't design a skiff per se, or figure it out. And, you know, there's a new line extension or another division she could kind of create that might work a little bit better in that world and increase her business. But, you know,
sometimes people think of being a creator as just, oh, I'm going to be an influencer. I'm going to get a lot of people to pay attention to what I have to say.
Right.
And there's so much more to it than that. I mean, that is definitely one model, I guess you could call it. But the real successes in this space, the people who are served well by being creators, don't think of it as creating content as being the end game. It's really just a means to an end. You know, it's about leadership. It's about taking your place as a leader. People who can turn their experience and their perspective and into not just influence, but into opportunities and assets that become maybe a business in and of themselves, but more often than not, assets that you can leverage to other areas of business outside the content economy, I guess we could call it.
So. I completely agree. As a jewelry person, I'm on TikTok all the time, embarrassingly inviting people like, hey, you have a really cool, I love your woodworking designs. I love your leatherworking. I love, you know, whatever it is. Like, you know, I like hit these people up. I'm like, hey, I really would like you to come to Military Creator Con. Selfishly, I want to see your work. But, you know, too, this could be very beneficial for you, right? So I do that all the time. One of the things I learned early on in my entrepreneurial experience was how vital a couple of people are early on in your journey as an entrepreneur. One is an attorney, the other is an accountant. Like, right? And so sometimes people are like, I don't need an attorney. You absolutely need to have a connection. To me, it's important to have a connection to somebody that you know, like, and trust, that somebody, especially somebody like you in our arena, that has that kind of experience, that has that background in creating, in content creation, or actually being creative, thinking outside the box. I think that's very powerful. So do you find that a lot of the proportion of your business is IP protection? Is it setting up entities? Is it just advising about contracts? What, or is it all of it? It could be all of it. So I'm just wondering where a lot of your business goes.
You know, it is sort of all of that, but also beyond that, a lot of what I do isn't sort of traditional lawyering. It's more becoming a strategy advisor or just helping identify what's the real goal here and how are we going to get from where we are now to where we want to be, that, you know, sort of figuring out how that transformation will occur. So in a sense, it's consulting, coaching, even just sort of being a friend, a critical thinking listener on the other end of the call or the Zoom conversation, just to sort of do the reality checks and maybe steer the thinking a little bit by asking maybe some tough questions from time to time. So it isn't always just drawing up a contract or sending someone a nasty letter or those kinds of things. Although that is most of the time, that's the reason somebody first comes to me. Yeah,
I think I think it's amazing that you've been able to, expand yourself into really advising in every aspect of what an entrepreneur, a creative entrepreneur, I'll say, does. Yeah. I think that's great. And you have so much experience. If people had any idea how much entertainment industry experience you have, they'd be like, shocked, right?
And not just entertainment industry, but entrepreneur industry as well, because, being an entrepreneur myself and doing the struggles in real time for myself, I mean, there's no better way to learn something than that and then teaching it or sharing it with others. And so, that's been exciting and fun and challenging and terrifying and all of that for me.
I was just going to ask you, what would you say, I'm going to ask you two questions. One is, what would you say was your hardest earned lesson?
Oh, that's a wonderful question. My hardest earned lesson, I would say patience, just learning to ride the ride as it happens and not try to be at the end already, all the time. Just, you'll get there. You know, you got to do the steps. You got to pedal the bike to get down the road or whatever it is. Understanding that it isn't always going to come overnight. Sometimes it does, and that's great. But if you're methodical and systematic about things and you have a framework for the way you think and do things, you get there. You get there.
Yeah, no, I love that because I think it's very important. A lot of people see what they think is other people's rapid success, and you don't really know what's gone behind that. And just because it happens maybe slower for somebody else, that doesn't make it any less, spectacular.
And like many businesses, show business is filled with those overnight success stories that took 35 years to get there.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's funny because, we always talk about my family being in the entertainment industry, and grandparents, my grandfather, my blood grandfather was a famous soccer player, but my mother's second husband, dad, who was kind of like my dad, was an amazing talent producer for a company called Quinn Martin Productions. Do you actually remember them? Yeah.
Barnaby
so
Jones.
She's from San Francisco, Barnaby Jones, Eye of the Unexpected, right? So I kind of grew up with all of that. And it's very interesting to me how little I kind of know about that time frame because I was so young. But anyway, I have another question for you. So you probably in your career have had a lot of advice. One, I have two questions, two-parter. One, what was the best advice you ever received, whether you took it or not, would be interesting to know as well.
What was the best advice I've ever received?
Yes.
I had a professor in law school who, after I graduated and I was taking my first job, he kind of gave me a little scowl and he said, "Is that really what you want to do?" And I said, "No, but it'll pay the bills." And he said, "Well, don't get too comfortable there because it'll be hard to get out. So, chase what you're really after, even if it means leaner times at the beginning, whatever. When the passion is there, that's what will really drive success and the persistence and the patience that you really need to make things happen." So eyes on the prize, I guess, is really the message.
That was a great bit of advice. And now I think I've forgotten my second question. Oh, I know what it was now. The tomorrow, right? So what I think the next question is, what other than that, because that was a great bit of advice to pass on, what would be your best advice to somebody? Like, let's say you were talking to yourself at 18.
Yeah.
What would your advice be?
Well, in this creator space, I think what I would have to say is that don't get too wrapped up in the numbers, in the metrics that most of the creator community is paying attention to. That's attention. Attention is a perishable good, right? When you make that video and it's a few weeks old or a few months old or whatever, unless it's gone viral, it's going to spoil. It's going to run out of meaning for people. And what you really want to do is find ways to turn that attention into an asset, something you can own. When you're building your whatever you're building and you're relying on a YouTube or even a podcasting platform or Spotify or whatever, you are somewhat building your house on someone else's beach, and it's beautiful beachfront property right up till they kick you out.
Right, right.
So you really want to find a way to own own the fruits of your labors, I guess I would say. So
yeah, that's conversation within our community, isn't it? It's a very big conversation.
We have to find a way to own the mailing list, get their social media accounts, but also get their email accounts so that, God forbid, we have a friend, actually a mutual friend, who just recently was bumped off of Facebook, right?
That's right. That's right.
And fortunately, he had a mailing list of people that he could reach out to and tell. That's how we found out. He told us, "Hey, I was bumped off Facebook. Fortunately, I'm still here."
Yeah.
You want to be able to do that. And
yeah, that Facebook jail is horrible.
Yeah, and so many folks are so built up on, well, I have this big Instagram following or a big TikTok following or a big YouTube following. And, that's all well and good, but the bottom could come out of that from under that tomorrow.
We have a speaker who'll be actually speaking on that. She's got about 270,000 followers, and she actually speaks specifically to that dip that happened. She had she was, I think, even much higher than that, of course.
Yeah.
And she took this big hit, and she talks about what she learned was really important to her in terms of that whole scenario. I don't want to give it away because she's going to be speaking at Military CreatorCon, but I think that's a super important conversation, and I love that we're having it right now.
Yeah.
My last question.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say my last question. because of course I always want to bring it back to Military Creator Con, is why are you involved with Military Creator Con? What is it about the community or the event that has you involved?
Well, to be really honest, I mean, I've known you and James as, you know, the founders and creators of Military Creator Con for a number of years through podcasting industry conferences of other organizations. And largely, when I heard what you were doing, I thought, if there's any way I can help, I just want to, it's out of a friendship and affinity for you guys. But as I really started thinking about it, first of all, I value that what our service members do for our country and have done and the kinds of sacrifices that they've made. And, you know, it's so easy for, you know, when you're 18 or 20 years old to just, you know, go and have a great time and party. It takes a kind of dedication and persistence and seriousness to go into the military. For some, it's not always their first choice, but it's something that anyway. But what I think really is great is that, you know, people who have served really have the exact qualities that make them eligible for success. You know, they translate into this creator economy, into any economy really, but because they bring that leadership and that discipline and an understanding of mission focus and their real world experience to things. And I, my whole mission and purpose in life is to help folks who have something to say or have something they can do that will change the world in some way, to do that, to get that message out, to achieve those goals safely and effectively. And I like to say to achieve the impact and the influence and the income that they really deserve. And so an opportunity to get in front of folks who are coming into this space or coming to the next level in this space, these are my people, and that's why I want to do this.
Well, we're super honored really to have you there. So it's really important to us that you know, that people are engaged in the community, and you've been always engaged with us so much, and we're grateful for your support. It means a lot to us, because I know it means a lot to the people who are also in the community. So thank you for that, because you bring so much to the table.
Well, it goes both ways, and I'm really, really looking forward to the event. So thanks for having
me. I'm thrilled. Well, I'm glad we got to spend this time together. I think it's about time we wrapped up pretty soon, but thank you. I just want to tell you how much from the bottom of our hearts, we are thrilled that you're going to be there, and what you're speaking on is so vital and really pertinent to what everybody's doing right now. So I love that. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I look forward to being there.
At MilitaryCreatorCon.com.
Great XQ. Roger.